It is June 16th, 2019. I'm Neil.
I'm Scott. And Cookie's enjoying this Father's Day, celebrating fathers while Neil and I spurn hours.
And to you fathers listening to this podcast, what the fuck are you doing when you could be spending this quality time with your family? And those of you who are not fathers, welcome to the podcast.
Today, we are going to be heavily focused on E3 and on things that are technically not E3, like Sony's absence from the conference. We talk a little bit in detail on Microsoft's conference and their continuation in the industry, especially their interaction with having more available platforms to play their games. We talk Astral Chain, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, and then the new Fire Emblem game, Three Houses.
I just realized we didn't talk about Persona 5 at all, but that's okay.
We did not.
We cover a plethora of interesting games that caught our eye, and we cap off the episode discussing the dumpster fire that is Shenmue 3 and Epic Store. This all on Fancy Ramen, episode 122, Forklifts Aren't That Cool.
There's someone famous named Dick Trickle, which Dick Trickle turning a trick is pretty great. Oh, he's a race car driver.
I'm sure there's a joke about him being a race car driver, too. I don't know. It's another exciting start of this podcast talking about Dick Trickle, the NASCAR or boxcar racer. I don't really know. That's not really the point. This is our post E3 podcast that's being recorded after the events of it's been practically a week since press conferences began. Scott, I'm going to leave it up to you. Do you want to start off by talking about E3, or do you want to just put it on the back burner?
Should we put it on the back burner and wait for Cookie? Because here's the thing. I'm sure he has... I know he has a couple small things to say about E3, but was it really big enough this year that we need like a huge deep dive into what's going on? I feel like E3 has gotten progressively... I don't know, less monumental, less consequential.
For the same reasons that I'm not going to end up finishing the Sekiro video that we did like 3 months ago, which is, it's no longer timely. If we don't talk about E3 today, I don't think it's worth talking about next week.
Sekiro video? Wait, oh, you had some video stuff with Sekiro? Because we did our two plus hour feature on Sekiro,
right?
And I know that
we did a Sekiro after Resident Evil 2 at one point, which also feels bad because I had to cancel a RE2, like probably our last session for RE2, since these antibiotics I'm on, I got kind of sick, are consistently make me feel like ass. So,
right. Well, antibiotics, as the name implies, are killing, they're meant to kill living organisms. And so you probably shouldn't feel that great when exposed to them.
Right.
Just because they don't kill you doesn't mean they don't, like, on a smaller scale, internally or molecularly maim you to a certain point.
And if the U.S. court system considers me a menace to society, maybe this bacteria is directly targeting me. Or antibiotic. It's directly targeting me.
Yeah, just wait till we have nanomachines, Neil. Then they can more directly target you.
But what about nano criminal machines? Nano rogue machines? Does that mean they support the disease and so forth?
I'm not sure. This is all stuff that we'll find out about in Cyberpunk 2077.
I wish I could seg directly into that, but...
But you can't.
Yeah, okay. I think before we talk about that, maybe we need to hit some broader points, and 2077 being a part of these broad points. But as you alluded to, like, E3 is definitely not everything it's been cracked up to be for the last however long it's been. around.
Yeah.
And I think it's only escalating, or not escalating, I should say, de-escalating.
It's de-escalating, yeah.
So in particular, the biggest thing about this particular E3 is that Sony dropped out, right? Despite it being a very important year, being that it's likely the lead into new consoles next year in 2020, or possibly 2021 if we're pessimistic about that timeline.
I mean, should we preface that E3 having a slide into being less of a big event isn't that bad? It's like, I don't know. I'm not worried or bothered by it. Like, since I was a kid watching what I believe G4 TV, the gaming channel, and they're like big summer E3 coverage every summer break, it was very cool to see the spectacle, but the way that information is being provided to the consumer now, it's like we don't necessarily need E3 as much to build hype because we have programs now like Nintendo Direct that are bringing at least company specific and like console specific items and hype on a more frequent basis with a more targeted approach. And so we don't need all of the pomp and circumstance and like bombast of E3 to catch our attention and get us super hyped for the game that's coming out next year. So I don't know. It's E3's making a bit of a slide with Sony being out and Nintendo having more of their communication happen outside of these big expos. It'll be interesting to see how that compares to stuff like Tokyo Game Show this year and things like that, where they're in the same vein as E3, I guess, and PAX is kind of similar to that too.
Well, like as the difference though is that PAX was designed to essentially be directed at the showgoer, the people that are there on the show floor. Yeah. And I mean, I can't say what TGS necessarily is at this point, but I mean, like, TGS has already had its slump start a handful of years ago when Japanese developers kind of ceased being the most relevant developers in game industry, or in video game industry specifically. But, I mean, PAX is all about the show floor. And if there's one thing, you know, the people that host or promote E3 and so on, that participate in creating E3 can take solace in, is that you actually had a few people or a few companies, well, I guess the one in particular being Nintendo, that has in the past kind of disappeared from E3, actually had a significant show floor presence. And so I think, I guess I was maybe getting ahead of myself, but I feel as if like E3 for the everyman, for the people that are not there experiencing it, has absolutely gotten worse. And it for every reason you've stated. But the experience for the public member of society going, not to say press or developer or insider, like likely that's because the show itself is now open and trying to cater towards that audience. And while it may very well seem to make the jobs of gaming journalists a little more difficult, because now you have to worry about the crowds and the hubbub, the public event that is now E3, you know, that is keeping you from doing your job per se. Those same people, like, they also have the ability to conduct business through other means other than E3 as well. E3 is just like a convenient gathering of a bunch of different developers and journalists and other industry insiders that allows them to, or enables them to have a bunch of shit to say over a short period of time, right?
Right.
Again, for us armchair reactionaries, as I'll say, it doesn't seem so great. Maybe like Sony staying out of E3 was ultimately like a good call.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously don't have a lack of games that they can show people if they're going to use their state of play as those sort of situations, and they don't necessarily want games on the show floor, then is there really any point to spend a significant amount of money at an event like E3 and an outside theater or stage for a separate press conference?
No, absolutely. They can keep the ace up their sleeve of The Last of Us 2 for when they really want to garner attention and hype. they don't need to. I guess with having a scheduled showcase, one thing is, as a company, you can plan for having something big to release, having something notable for that showcase. But you have better adaptability if you're just not participating in that when you want to get your consumer customer attention. So by not participating, Sony can essentially say, well, hey, the demo for The Last of Us 2 or like our next preview trailer isn't quite ready yet. No worries. We don't have like a concrete deadline for this showcase that we need to have it for. We'll do it when we're ready, and it'll be 90 days before we release the game. That way we can drum up hype and garner all this interest and get our pre-orders all at once without having to make trailer 2 happen for E3 2019 and then have to piece together a third trailer for that last bit of hype to then drive, say, pre-order sales and whatnot.
I also have a suspicion that they don't have enough to show regarding the PlayStation 5 for them to even want to talk about that on a stage.
Yeah, it's going to be weird without these with the conferences losing their clout. Do the major platforms of PlayStation and Nintendo and Xbox. Nintendo's already been on the outside of this, but do PlayStation and Xbox continue to essentially try and match each other toe-to-toe with their consoles, with their new generations and specs? Because what we've seen historically is as soon as we find out about a PS3, an Xbox 360 is also in the know. Like, we're also aware of this PS4. We get Xbox One. You make a Xbox One S or whatever that is called. Xbox One X. I don't know. I'm so out of the Microsoft game at this point. But then you have the PS4 Pro, and you have this competing back and forth on your hardware. Do they feel as compelled to be releasing this information at the same time to continue to be toe-to-toe with having the highest performing hardware outside of the PC market? Or do they go more the Nintendo route where it's like, don't worry, our console's coming, but you know, it will be in this generation. We're just not going to be releasing it within the same month as the other competitor's next generation console.
There's like three different things that I think make this entire approach and mentalities to the PlayStation 5 kind of different from any other generation. And before I get to that, I guess it's worth noting that it wasn't House. It was some other higher level executive or person at Sony did go out for an interview with. I don't recall. I'm not going to commit to any sort of possibility on who it was, but he did have an interview in which he spoke to decent detail about what the PlayStation 5 or the next PlayStation. I don't even know if he coined the term five. But what the next PlayStation was shaping out to be and what their design philosophy was and how they were going to approach the situation. So in a sense, they've already done somewhat of a not announcement. And I think that was also kind of shoring up or assuring their hardcore diehard fans that something's in the works. We just don't necessarily need to show it right now. But the three interesting points that make a PlayStation 5 put a PlayStation 5 in such an interesting position is that they seem to want to react to how the Scarlet is received.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's why I don't think they necessarily wanted to have anything that major come out during E3. They're in an industry where the Switch, which is an absolute, we'll say, unorthodox approach to console gaming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it absolutely was pre-release. The concept of what the Switch was going to be, there was a lot of hot and a lot of cold reception and responses to how well the Switch was going to be. And in hindsight, now we can say the Switch is like fantastic.
Yeah.
But we're now in a world where the Switch, which, you know, can barely run 1080,
is still genius and like this incredibly sought after console and experience.
Like, I mean, a lot of people out there are playing Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild only on handheld, and that's a 720 display at that point, and still absolutely in love with that game. We're in an era where Famitsu, their public poll stated that Breath of the Wild was legitimately in the top three of video games released during the Heisei period, or the Heisei era.
Mm-hmm.
Like, only being topped out by Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, which, again, is another Nintendo... Well, it used to be Nintendo exclusive. I guess now it's on mobile devices as well. As Sony, how much are you really putting... How much effort and concern are you putting into to bare specs when you know that the performance and sellability of a product isn't necessarily tied to that? But at the same time, does Sony have the innovations to actually make a product sell itself just based off of sheer quality and usability?
Mm-hmm.
And then this third point of contention is that there's actually been, which I don't know if we covered in any sense or form, cooperation between Microsoft and Sony. Not PlayStation specifically, but Sony in regards to cloud-based solutions for gaming.
Right.
And that definitely seems like a possible team-up between Sony and Microsoft in response to, you know, Google Stadia and Amazon. Well, I mean,
absolutely
part of Google. So mix that with the fact that Microsoft is seemingly going to become even more open to their games and software being spread across the landscape, and like notably Steam, and PlayStation actually starting, or I mean, it's not like they're the ones to allow or disallow all the time, but more games actually becoming cross-platform, you know, with PC, PlayStation, and Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you told me that in 2 years, that we actually had a cross-platform or cross-console compatibility that we would never have imagined before, and some sort of partnership between Microsoft and Sony, in which suddenly Sony, you know, it's now the PlayStation X or some bullshit. Like,
mm-hmm.
I guess I wouldn't be that surprised.
Yeah. But if you heard it back when PlayStation was being like reticent about even having crossplay happen.
Right.
It would sound insane.
But, you know, there's a likelihood that Stadia ends up changing the climate of video games in a way that console developers have to somewhat band together.
The cooperation element, though, could be I think it could be pretty advantageous. If we think about the console exclusives that exist for, like, Microsoft, how much do you think they're pressured or forced into having to cooperate more with Halo and Gears of War being, like, their main exclusives and essentially being a third-person shooter and a first-person shooter? Those games are still very popular. That type of game, you know, sells millions of copies every year with all different sorts of skins or formats. But it's relatively simple.
I mean, do we have confirmation that Halo Infinite and Gears 5 are going to be on PC as well? Like, I know Phil Spencer has talked about wanting to get their titles onto Steam.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if we've actually had confirmation, or maybe even...
It has been confirmed Halo Infinite will release on PC same time as the launch for Xbox. So PC access, and if they want to, they can make it available for Steam as well. Same release date as the console game.
So regarding E3, like, Microsoft obviously did their best effort to really raise excitement around their show, and they were successful in some ways. I guess I left that stream thinking to myself, how many of these games are actually forcing people to buy an Xbox to play?
None now, because I also did a quick background check on Gears of War 5, and that also will have PC release, it looks like, from E3 news.
I feel like Microsoft marketing as a whole did a great job of, like, throwing all of these cross-platform titles and all of these, and their few, like, exclusive Microsoft Studio titles together. But, like, at the end of the day, I was really underwhelmed by the games of the five or six studios that they acquired were even working on.
Right.
And, like... of their own titles, like, we didn't get any gameplay of Halo Infinite, so who knows how early in production that is.
Right.
Gears 5 also was, if I'm not mistaken, just a montage of Mrs. Gears or Miss Gears, like, struggling with facial features, like trying to figure out her Shakespeare characters while she started to have like stands of the entire Gears cast like materialize outside of her head as well. Like, kudos to the Microsoft team for putting together like a great show and getting good titles in. But like, I honestly thought Xbox had to have a much larger first party presence at this E3 to cover up the last few lackluster years, and I was disappointed is maybe the best way to put it. And I say disappointed because, you know, with the attitude of these games are going to be on Steam or on PC, and there could be something cool enough for me to just fucking deal with the Windows Store. It's not that big of a deal, but it kind of is.
They swept the market, right, with Sea of Thieves last year. Everybody's still playing that.
Which is like a great fucking concept.
I think it's actually got like relatively popular reception. We just don't actually hear that it is doing amazing number-wise.
Which may or may not be like the same boat as Fallout 76 at this point then. Let's be real.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Fallout 76 was a hot mess, according to... I've talked to one person who's like, yeah, this game's actually pretty chill. Most everybody else has had pretty frustrated interactions with it. I think Sea of Thieves had a rocky start, right? But then people, like, they did some quick fixes to it, and the people who stuck around or got into it later seem to have been satisfied.
It sounds like, okay, and maybe this is just me taking Bethesda's word at it, or not even just Bethesda, rather, but it seems like the people that like Fallout 76 really like Fallout 76.
Mm-hmm.
Just because a game does not turn out to be its original, does not necessarily appease the original release expectations, doesn't necessarily mean it can't get better. And maybe I'm taking Bethesda's word on it a little too much. But it's not like I haven't heard people say that, yeah, I mean, it really sucked at the start or things were really buggy, but now it's pretty fun. I mean, is it a masterpiece?
Probably not.
Yeah, but I feel like we can say that about every single Bethesda-developed game at this point, is that we always go in expecting a fucking masterpiece, and then it turns out to in some way contain a dumpster fire, however big or small, and then we just accept it for what it is.
Right. But how many masterpieces have we played in the last couple of years? I will say Sekiro is a masterpiece.
Wow, okay.
I'll say Nier Automata is a masterpiece. For me, Breath of the Wild is not a masterpiece.
I don't know how.
I think by popular acclaim, it probably is, and I'm just being picky because I seem to like a more traditional Zelda experience. I actually don't know why I'm so reluctant to do this, with Zelda being probably one of my favorite game franchises. There's just, I don't know, there's something that holds me back on it, even though this is a game that I've beaten and then just come back to because it has such a fun game world that I can just roam around and still have fun with no purpose, you know, or create my own purpose.
Like, I'm gonna say, I feel like I've stated this before, but in case I haven't, if we take away narrative and story, which I absolutely admit is like the big motivator for me to play games, right?
Yeah.
Breath of the Wild is the best game of all time. That's my feeling. If story and plot don't matter, Breath of the Wild is the best game of all time.
Okay. It's hard to argue.
I'm reluctant to even bring up this notion, but that game has maybe less cutscene and dialogue than Twilight Princess, which, like, to be quite frank, despite me not caring about half of the dialogue in that game, is on the bearer side too, all things considered. But Link to the Past also doesn't have Jack Squat in dialogue. Originals, well, I mean, but it's also not fair to compare games of that age when, you know, quite frankly, there were not people capable of writing a short story or novella writing stories in video games. That obviously is not like a blanket statement, but like,
yeah,
let's
I was
be
like,
real.
Okay.
Let's be real here. It's not like the norm of video game stories in the 90s was high enough for
it's
us
my
to put
fault
in that regard.
For deviating from this hot take, though, I guess we should go back to the masterpiece talk, right? Masterpieces are few and far between, and in all honesty, maybe I don't know, maybe I'm even being too generous with the distribution of the term masterpiece. But I guess to circle back to our original point, right? We're talking about what's been released of, I don't know, of just like amazing quality in games to garner attract attention. Like, we deviated so hard from this point, I'm having a hard time getting back to where
somehow
we started.
Bethesda came up because we were talking about Fallout 76.
Fallout 76, yeah. And talking about the... Yeah, I mean, we talked about that due to Sea of Thieves. Okay, we're slowly going to reconstruct the terrible path we took to move away from our topic.
Right.
But, yeah, you can't expect a masterpiece to be made. And with any developer, really, like each one of those games that we did name, we should note each one of those is pretty individual and exclusive from one another. We're not naming like three Nintendo games that qualify as masterpieces, right? I named a weird platinum indie game, or I guess like not indie game, but a weird platinum offshoot as a masterpiece. We mentioned one Nintendo like flagship title as a masterpiece, and then a From Software. Like, these are, besides Nintendo, these aren't massive developers, but they're definitely in the AAA range. They're niche AAA, I'd even say.
I would almost even say at this point, we, like, I know it's not our cup of tea, but I think Grand Theft Auto 5 and Grand Theft Auto Online should probably be considered. Like, the reason we talk about this, I think we've kind of moved into Bethesda, for that matter. I don't know how it pertains to Bethesda's E3, though.
A conference I didn't even watch outside of looking directly for Doom Eternal news and trailer.
Which
was the right choice.
It's kind of hard to really associate Doom Eternal hype as having a good press conference for Bethesda, because this is not the first time we've seen Doom Eternal gameplay.
Yeah. We've just seen a little bit more, and it looks so movement heavy.
And
I'm
looks
very
really
excited.
Good. And this is, again, one of those really situations good. Where as homestayers versus showgoers, we obviously don't get the hands-on gameplay of Doom Eternal, so it kind of belittles our experience with them. I think it's fair that we're honestly grading or discussing their press conference or show more than anything. I'm lukewarm on Bethesda as a whole. Like, they also had... Let me double check. I don't know if either of us really have a reason to focus, nor do we have any information on it. But the game Tokyo, or excuse me, Ghostwire Tokyo was announced at Bethesda. That seems interesting. There's not enough to really speculate on what that game really is going to be. It's known for, I can't remember the director's name, but everyone's in love with the director because she's outgoing and like really passionate about video games, talking on stage and very stage, or has a strong stage presence.
Yeah. It's Ikumi Nakamura.
Yeah, I think that's something like that. Nakamura is correct for sure. But again, as a whole, I don't think there were huge standout moments. The titles that we knew they had under development and just around the corner, like Doom Eternal and Wolfenstein, are kind of known commodities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really recall other big things.
There was Outworlds or something like that.
Oh, Outer Worlds, right?
Yeah.
Which is from the creators of Fallout, but... From hands-on reports, is quite a different game than Fallout, which might be a good thing, is probably a good thing at this point in time.
I don't know how exciting the concept is.
You know, Wasteland 3 is also being released, and by the way, when I tried to play Wasteland 2, I was like, I can't fucking play these games anymore.
Yeah.
It's Baldur's Gate 3, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Lots of threes coming out. No Half-Life 3 confirmed. What a shame.
Rest in peace. Morgan, what's his name? Doesn't matter. Any other big topics to bring up, at least in terms of the developers or the publishers that had showings?
Do you have anything for the PC game showcase? Because that's something that I did not see or watch, really. I watched almost all of Nintendo Treehouse.
I watched everything with the exception of Nintendo Treehouse, and my mentality was if I didn't retain the information for more than a couple days, it obviously wasn't hype enough for me to remember. And I think I kind of snoozed through most of the PC gaming show.
Okay. Baldur's Gate 3 is exciting.
Is it? Is it really exciting?
PC gaming. Well, Cookie made a point about the folks behind Divinity Original Sin 2 getting in behind Baldur's Gate 3. And as someone who has now picked up and played a little bit of Divinity Original Sin 2, man, it's got a really weird and fun and super intricate combat and, like, I don't know, just like quest system. It's very technical, it's very granular, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it right now. So it got me hyped for Baldur's Gate.
Let's put this on the back burner for a second, because I definitely want to talk about the prospect of Baldur's Gate 3, mm-hmm. and maybe we'll discuss that as we go through specific games, right? I guess I'm going to finish off my broad topic of press conferences and so forth by saying mm-hmm. that, honestly, everyone kind of sucked. Everyone had their moments of coolness, but for the most part, it was kind of a boring E3. I know that there are new consoles on the horizon, but I honestly expected there to be a little bit more of a big bang before the release of a PlayStation 5 and whatever Scarlett is, an Xbox 2. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to be Xbox TOO. No, but really. The only developer, the only show that I really felt like genuinely positive throughout the entire course of the event or of the stream was Nintendo, which I'm sure we'll talk about the specific titles, but it just felt like there was title after title after title of things where I was like, I want to play this. Oh, I should probably not buy X games or, you know, whenever the release window is. I'd be like, well, mm-hmm. okay, if this releases, then I could play this. And then another title would come up and I'm like,
they're going to be conflicting, yeah.
Oh, I only have so much money and time. Astral Chain looks way better than expected, too. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I watched all the gameplay for... we'll talk about Astral Chain when we get to the dig into Nintendo section. But what... I mean, anything else you want to mention on the general end before we talk game impressions or Nintendo conference more in depth? Because that's where I spent like a majority of my time. I guess I should just say Shenmue 3 does look like the best game of 2008. So
no, okay, yeah, I'll hold my judgment on there. I will quickly say that part of me thinks Sony, like, obviously this is not true, but my headcanon is that Sony decided to just stay away from E3 after they saw Shenmue 3.
probably good.
They were like, okay, we started this fire, let's
back away slowly, yeah, wait till it burns everything else down.
But yeah, if we have time to talk about that, let's absolutely put that aside for now, and we can discuss it to greater detail. This is probably a good time to point out, because I purposely avoided this because I figured we'd both want to talk about 2077. That was like the highlight of Microsoft's press conference, having Keanu Reeves on stage, you know, in what I imagine is him just being like, oh, I just have to give a quick 10 second thing on Cyberpunk 2077, whatever the fuck this game is. I'm sure he has conceptual knowledge of what the game is if he's a major character in the game. But let's be real.
You never know.
I doubt he's that well versed into like what he's walking into, right? He's a super famous movie star. He has contractual
He's currently going through a Keanu Reeves surgence with John Wick coming out and just all his other like positive media, like full court press that's been going on.
And it's a super cool moment. Again, like, God save the possibility of him actually being a terrible person. Who knows? We can't vouch for that type of thing. But his current persona in like social media is he's like a cannot do anything wrong figure, and having him up on stage talking up the game and then someone yelling you're breathtaking, him saying no, you're breathtaking, you're all breathtaking, and then trying to get the audience to get back on track is like a good, it's just a great wholesome moment for
it's about as good as that could have gone. Like I can't think of it getting better than that.
Oh, but I can. Once they show the gameplay of Cyberpunk 2077, or not even gameplay, it's all cinematic cutscene footage.
Right now, yeah.
I don't know what I thought that game was going to be, but I definitely didn't imagine it having movie-esque cutscenes. And seeing that type of stuff makes me very interested in the game. I also, and again, I'm not huge on 2077 pre-release media and so forth, but hearing him referred to as samurai, I don't know if there's any old Shadowrun fans listening in, but a street samurai is like a class from Shadowrun, which is essentially like the closest thing you have to like a warrior or a knight or whatever in, you know, D&D or classic role-playing. So having that reference to him as samurai fucking strikes me at a point of like, oh yeah, that's what I want to hear. You guys know, like I'm about ready to expect him to pull out, like, I know this is not the street samurai's class or purpose, but pull out like a 1/4-inch fucking analog jack from his neck to pop it into like, you know, a fucking futuristic console. And it
should be interesting. I haven't looked into it too much yet.
I think that game is going to be what Deus Ex Deus Ex games wanted to be. And if it is, I'm going to be extremely psyched. But yeah, specific games. You sound excited about Astral Chain. I'm excited about Astral Chain.
I actually lost excitement the more I looked into it, because I thought the combat looked really good and tight, but a little repetitive after a while.
I'm going to ask you a question. You know, do you not feel like, if you really think about Nier Automata, do you not feel like the combat was...
That combat is repetitive. Yeah, no, I absolutely think it is. And so I thought about that point, but I also thought about the fact that... Astral Chain has yet to show me or sell me on a really interesting story.
So,
which Nier did. Like, within the first 20 minutes of playing Nier, if you're not somehow just like gobsmacked or dumbstruck by the scope and like background that the story could exist within, then I don't know what's wrong. But for, you know, Astral Chain, watching like an hour's worth of gameplay and talk about it, I was like, oh, okay, cool. It's like they took these other dimension beings, they enslaved some of them into police service, kind of a weird concept, and then it looks like it's having a corrupting influence or spread across the city. The twist is going to be the actual interconnectedness of this world and that other dimension, and some sort of secret or interesting backstory behind our twin characters, male and female protagonists that you choose.
Wait. Are they actually twins?
Yeah. Well, they're brother and sister. I don't know if they're twins. I'm going to say they're twins.
Are the two characters... Okay. You're going... But they're not confirmed twins. Because you can make one character have black skin and blonde hair, and the other one have pale ass white skin and red hair. I don't know if you can customize both of them, but
I think I'm not exactly sure. The guy who did the demo, what was his name? Demetrius. He was a black dude. He made a black character. I did not look close. I guess I skipped past like the character building point, but later when they introduce his sister, she has the default hair, I think the default like Japanese woman hair, but she also has black skin to match him,
so it likely it like in a Dragon Age 2 sense, when you customize your protagonist, your family all share some common things like skin complexion and so forth.
it's not Fallout 4. I can make my wife some like hideous transmogrified being, and then I just make a normal dude for my character so I can see this just really, fiend frozen in ice.
Her personality is amazing, though. Trust me.
Yeah. So, we'll never know because she got fridged.
So, fridged and then shot, right?
Yeah, you know about the it's the like feminist storytelling concept of fridging a woman, in which you essentially kill a woman in order to motivate another character. Like you use a woman as a plot device by offing them, removing any sort of agency or character that they have in order to motivate the gruff husband who only loved one woman who's now been killed and must avenge her, giving the whole thing like plot and motivation. Like fridging women is super, super common and it's a shitty storytelling trope. But Fallout 4 was literally like, well, we can take this one step further and make sure she's actually in the closest thing to a fridge possible.
Hold up. Is this actually a reference to Kyle Rayner and Green Lantern?
I think so.
Whose either mother or girlfriend was like dismembered and put into a fridge. And then whichever one wasn't fridged,
yep,
ended up in an oven, except it wasn't actually her.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. If you do a very quick, Wikipedia search, women in refrigerators. Is a reference to the comic book trope whereby female characters are injured, raped, killed, or depowered in an event colloquially known as fridging to stimulate protective traits and often as a plot device intended to move a male character's story arc forward.
So was John Wick 1 and, yes, just and fridging, then there's a the, picture. Fridging the
yeah,
dog?
Yeah, John Wick 1 is fridging the wife and the dog. Panel from Green Lantern number 54, where the Green Lantern is looking at his dismembered wife in the fridge, literally shows up as the one image on the Wikipedia article.
Oh, man. I knew I was stumped. I knew upon reading that comic, well, digitally, okay, just saying that out there, I knew I was stumbling on, like, history being made. Fucking amazing writing in video games, excuse me, in comic books. Who says comic books are not an art form?
Yeah.
No. I digress. So here's the thing I feel about Astral Chain. We absolutely know that like this story is going to be anime as fuck. And I think it appeals to people that have... when I say this now, I'm thinking to myself, this is kind of weird, but like the people that love the police anime story, like we're talking Pat Labor.
Psychopaths.
Pat Labor. No, well, I mean, Pat Labor in particular is like a mixture. Oh, no. But yeah. Psychopaths as well. It's a mixture of like police and sci-fi, right? Joking aside, I think Appleseed, Ghost in the Shell, like I think it hits that audience more, and so it probably fills that particular market's niche to a T. When I look at Astral Chain, what I see is a game that is potentially 14 hours long, tight, concise, get through the whole game, bam, you're done. Oh, by the way, now that you beat the game, you've unlocked new difficulties and new challenge modes, and you know, a game that has a functional story, but is supported by essentially challenges and higher difficulties and things like that on replayability, which, like, I'll be frank, I don't think is necessarily the recipe for like a great game. But it's certainly something Platinum has done time and time and time again. And as long as they nail the story, like from a functional standpoint and an entertainment standpoint, I think it'll be fine. I'm excited to play it.
I should preface, I'm not anti Astral Chain. I just maybe lost the motivating hype behind loving Nier so much and knowing that it was being directed by the lead game designer for that game. Even though we do know that Nier is also a huge product of Yoko Taro.
Who was absent from E3 as far as I can tell.
Which is fine. He's working on another masterpiece, and that takes time and effort.
part of me really wonders, it's a very, very far-fetched idea, but his name had been brought up before in discussion, like not specifically like, oh, this Yoko Taro guy's at Square now, but his name was brought up in discussion regarding the continuation of the Final Fantasy series some months ago.
Pretty crazy.
If he made Final Fantasy 16, I don't necessarily think that's great for his career or for the trajectory of Final Fantasy. But, I mean, he has to be working on something right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Should we very quickly sidebar to the fact that Final Fantasy 7, a game that I've never played, that's a damn good-looking remake. Like, yeah. They're hooking me, someone who knows that playing that game was a huge formative experience for a lot of gamers around my... Like, I could have played it and had it be a formative experience, but I did not have a PlayStation at the time, you know, or knowledge of the game. And so I missed out on that. But it seems like they're really hooking a consumer like me, as well as... people who have already played the game by just making a complete rework and facelift from the original game.
So it'd be obvious enough that if you're a fan of Final Fantasy VII, if that's one of your favorite games, this is a slam dunk for you. But I think it definitely says something when I consider Final Fantasy VII like pretty low on my tier list of Final Fantasies. Not saying it's in the bottom half, but I definitely put other games ahead of it. And I am not that interested in hearing the same or experiencing the same story again. Mm-hmm. Saying that, that's how I felt before watching those trailers, or those trailers, teasers, the gameplay footage. After experiencing everything they offered this year, I am absolutely sold.
Is experience the key word? Because it's like, it's going to be the same story, but the experience seems like it's entirely different from what playing the original game was.
I mean, I would love to talk spoilers and stuff. There are just certain elements to that game that I don't like, and I am hoping that a few things get rewritten and written with a better perspective in mind. I feel like it's one of those stories. This discussion is for another time after we have all played Final Fantasy VII, in particular its remake, but. I'm just gonna say that, like, I feel like I kind of fell in love, you know, within a fictional standpoint, with Tifa Lockhart as soon as they showed her in all those cutscenes. Like, they do a good job. They do a really good job of remaining true to the image and idea of these characters, despite being in a completely different form. And to someone like me who hasn't played Advent Core, Crisis Core, Advent Children, I mean, like, I have not consumed any other Final Fantasy VII media, just because it's not my favorite Final Fantasy game. And as a result, but when I watch this trailer, I am so excited about how they're taking a new approach with ATB. They're essentially incentivizing you to whack things in like a character action, or rather action RPG element, in order to gain your turns. So it's like for random encounters with bullshit enemies, you just whack them to death. But when you're fighting bosses, you have to endanger yourself to build up bar to actually use the skills that will likely do more significant damage. And instead of just having magical dodge ability that consumes your mana, which I think is a bad design element of Final Fantasy XV, you actually have a block and a dodge button. Like, this feels... And if you hit the attack button, you swing. You don't just hold it down. These are things that, like, I can criticize Final Fantasy XV for. Again, I like Final Fantasy XV. I don't think these things ruin it. But if you told me Final Fantasy VII, a game that was beloved across all aspects of its game by its fan base, was going to have Final Fantasy XV battle system in place, I would tell you that you're fucking crazy. Like, you're not doing this game a service. And this battle system looks like it could be really fun. It really boils down to how well everything is balanced out and how well it actually feels when we get our hands on it. But I am extremely optimistic for it.
In my realm of nostalgic games that have caught my attention, very quickly, I just want to say that Legend of Zelda Link's Clayawakening looks gorgeous and has me super excited to play a game I haven't played in more than a decade. Maybe it's been 15 years since I've played Link's Awakening DX. And they haven't changed very... I mean, they've given it a complete graphical overhaul. They have also obviously remastered all of the music, so it's not these 8-bit melodies that we're familiar with from the Game Boy, which I think that this game has some really wonderful and unique music. Like a lot of these themes have never been re-referenced in Zelda games, and there are a lot of themes that have been tweaked and morphed and rearranged over the years to be used in a variety of Zelda games. But some themes like Marin's song and whatnot were a one and done with this game, and so to hear them remastered and in a completely different format should be really, really satisfying. And
so the Windfish, the Ballad of the Windfish?
Ballad of the Windfish has made sort of a cameo in Majora's Mask, but I don't think it comes into any other game as far as I know. Not to spoil anything, but it is a dreamlike world, and so they play with the overlap of that. They have side scrolling areas and dungeons and levels. It's really cool, actually. It's the only side-scrolling boss fight I can think of in a Zelda game occurs in this game.
Aside from Zelda 2.
Yeah. Zelda 2 is a side-scroller, so I guess I am wrong there. But they bring in a Yoshi doll that's literally called Yoshi, so direct reference in the text in the game without... the like wink wink and nod nod of having the Mario and Luigi characters or Goombas and Piranha Plants as some dungeon enemies. I think they even have Beetles from like the original Super Mario Brothers in there. There's a lot of cool references. But long story short, what I wanted to say is the game has been reworked, it looks like, so you have Sword and Shield on A and B buttons, and then X and Y have your items. So you now have 4 functional moves instead of 2 like the original Game Boy. It is a gorgeous new art style that they haven't done before with the Legend of Zelda game that looks really cool. And instead of the picture dungeon or the photo booth that exists in Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening DX, they have a essentially randomized dungeon builder that you build a dungeon and then you can crawl through it with a timer attached to you to try and beat challenges, where I assume you'll get rewards for doing that. You take these randomized dungeon elements and you fit them into a template, and then you try and like roam through the dungeons. It's a very it's a nod to the Mario Maker success of building your own levels using prefabricated tools by Nintendo game designers and developers, which I think is a really cool idea. Like that adds some really interesting stuff, especially it's like, imagine if Bloodborne let us make chalice dungeons. How insane would that be?
This is where I say chalice, what? Because I have never like more than one
you
area.
Never did the chalice dungeons?
Nope. I beat
You're
the
insane.
Game
That's
and
the
then I
best
let it
part
go.
Of the game.
I've heard
they're so hard and weird. Yeah, they're a completely separate experience from the game. So anyone who's played Bloodborne who didn't give Chalice Dungeons a try really needs to go back and do that, because they're a very unique experience from the rest of it.
I always figured I would do the Chalice Dungeons with a friend, and then I just kind of forgot. So I put them on the back burner, and then I just never did them.
We should do a Bloodborne playthrough now that I have PlayStation Plus.
Oh yeah, that would be fun. You get to deal with all the fucking like the PvP of Bloodborne was so different from Dark Souls.
It absolutely is. No spell, like no. I guess there's no caster, like just hitting you with Crystal Spear from point blank range. You know, makes for a very different type of fight.
I imagine we both might have plans for the day. It's Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, every fathers out there, or mothers that would rather be called fathers instead.
Yeah, but moms, carry your weight.
Oh yeah, this is the day.
I said we'd turn it around for Father's Day, and I was not going to fail on that. Moms, do better. Dads, here's to you.
So I guess we can this just kind of like get through the games that you think are worth mentioning.
Fire Emblem The Royal. So Fire Emblem Three Houses, after watching this gameplay video, I am absolutely 100% convinced that at some point someone said, you know, there's building personal relationships and social links in Fire Emblem. Let's take some Persona like elements and this like slice of life gameplay and throw it into the Fire Emblem model.
Is it a life simulator, like day by day?
So you I assume have not watched the gameplay trailer for it.
No, I watched the one short trailer where they talk about, boy, this is the worst fucking class reunion ever. And then I kind of checked out. I'm like, all right, I'm still going to play the game, but you guys kind of fucked it up there.
No, it's great. It looks like there is a five-year, there are two discrete periods in time. One is 5 years prior to the war, where you're a teacher for the students of these three houses. And then the second half is 5 years later, after a war has been initiated, I assume, between the three houses. And so the first part is managing your school life as a professor or instructor at this school on a calendar with random events happening every day in which you bond and interact with your students, which then allows them to access powers and abilities and classes in the second half. It is Persona 5 Fire, or it is Persona Fire Emblem. Like, it looks like it's a really weird combo, but Fire Emblem has always been good at the character writing and interaction. It's just also introducing the incredibly irresponsible sensei and their students' relationship building that Fire Emblem already has tread on more treacherous ground.
Yeah, you have to wait 5 years before you can bed any of them.
Yeah,
that way it's legal. Have you ever heard of the game Tokyo Mirage Session?
I have.
Maybe you should get
on
that.
You. Maybe.
Except it's the opposite. It's like it takes other things from SMT and puts them with other things from Fire Emblem. Three Houses is like the bizarro version of TMS.
It is the reverse of it, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, that looks good. I'm still excited about it. Animal Crossing New Horizons?
Man, I haven't played Animal Crossing since the GameCube version, but being stranded on a deserted island and like having a more robust crafting option than any Animal Crossing game beforehand has me kind of interested. Like, this isn't my kind of game. This is the kind of game that Sierra would really like, but I'm considering buying it to try it out and then donating to her because I know she'll like it and play it a lot.
So, if the first game, headcanon wise, is about Tom Nook holding you financially hostage.
Now he's holding you literally hostage.
Yeah, this game he's like, hey, guess what, you scum? You're gonna live on this island and make me a profit, okay?
Yeah. I mean, he's still holding you financially hostage, but he's also holding you physically hostage down too.
It's like the stakes have gotten higher. We're watching The Hunger Games Part 4 right here. Tom Nook. Put you on an island.
I'm surprised he's never shown up on like an ultimate Nintendo villain list or something, because when you think about it, there is nothing that is not villainous about that sweet raccoon.
Maybe it's just our generation that's so weary of debt and, you know, perpetual borrowing. Like, other generations see that as a perfectly acceptable way and walk of life. That Tom Nook
because they can
saint.
Get out of it.
I like how, like, each time we see Tom Nook, we see more of his family and stuff. It's like they're trying to make us not feel as bad about, you know, providing his profession of being a fucking loan shark.
Now, aren't all his kids kind of like they're in the same business as him, though? Like,
yeah,
they also take advantage of you.
Nintendo
like, they have businesses and industries that are built on the back of you having to spend bells to get things that you need or want.
Nintendo is in debt. Like their agenda is telling us why we're poor and why we aren't all millionaires. That's because we don't got that Tom Nook DNA and blood in our system. Okay. We were born to Animal be unfortunate and be taken advantage of.
We didn't talk about the Outer Worlds very much, but Animal Crossing is actually the perfect narrative to talk about the evils of capitalism or like capitalistic greed. While Outer Worlds is trying to do that, they could learn a thing or two from this cutesy animal day of life, like a slice of life simulator.
Wait, was that all you wanted to say about Outer Worlds?
Yeah, that's it. I don't care about that game. It doesn't look that interesting.
Stricken Legend from of Zelda, the list.
Yeah, Legend of Zelda, BOTW, Basement of the Wicked, or Basement of the Warlock. I'm not sure which one I want to give it yet. Has us, we've seen the preview of a desiccated Ganon, in a deep dark cave in a direct Breath of the Wild sequel, sorry, to the like smash hit title of 2017. It's kind of insane to think that they're doing a direct sequel to this game so soon. But I'm thrilled because I love the game that I think everybody can admit is a weird, almost like trashy cult classic sequel that is Majora's Mask to the also amazing success of Ocarina of Time.
I'm just going to say,
if they make a spooky Breath of the Wild, I'm in.
I'm just going to say that I don't think anyone's allowed to say cult classic when the overwhelming majority seems to like it. That, because that's the impression I get from Majora's Mask at this point. Everyone fucking loves Majora's Mask. I'm not commenting on whether or not it's good or bad. I'm just saying that I feel like calling it a cult classic at this point is a misnomer. Breath of the Wild sequel. I don't think it's necessarily too early. They didn't give any definitive time frame on when they expected it to be out. They just said it was in development, and it's been 2 years since Breath of the Wild came out.
Breath
and
of the Wild
despite
released, yeah.
What we think, Zelda games actually come out at a higher frequency than we expect them. It's just that there are
That's
handhelds
true.
Mixed in there. But when your handheld has become your console, be it the Switch, it's no surprise that they have something come out this, or you know, in the works this soon, or announced,
you
I should say.
You make a really good point. They used to alternate really between console, handheld, and sometimes those handhelds like Oracle of Ages, Oracle of Seasons were essentially a duo release, you know. Phantom Hourglass and then whatever the other
Train?
Spirit Tracks and whatnot. Yeah, they have these handhelds that come out that normally garner less attention but kind of sate the appetite in between the console releases.
So I can't
what was
vet
the
this.
One thing I was gonna say
oh sorry go ahead
just one thing there's still a chance that this releases before Metroid Prime 4.
I want to speak on that, actually, not specifically Metroid Prime 4, which we didn't get anything from, but let's be real, they've restarted development in January, and I'm assuming that's
which
from
is
the ground
fine
up.
Yeah, yep. That's totally fine.
But the I can't vet this since I didn't end up looking up the article myself, but Tiffany found an interview or article coming from some of the devs or developers of Breath of the Wild, and basically they were lamenting the fact that they actually had so far in advance had announced the release date of Breath of the Wild. Like, they basically thought it was a mistake to, as early as they did, say when it was going to come out, because it put them under more stress and so forth. So likely, with that in mind, they will assuredly, you would think, unless they want to repeat their mistake there, assuredly not release the date until unless it's like closer than we would expect or closer than Breath of the Wild's announcement. So who knows?
I think that's a really good principle to follow. Normally, when you make a big mistake and you lament it,
right,
you don't repeat it immediately with your next, you know, title or launch. Like,
and now obviously,
you sometimes
Breath of the Wild
regress on learning.
But with that in mind, that may very well mean that the game is actually further in development than we actually know or can attest to, given what we currently have. Yeah. And who knows, maybe this is a late 2020 or early 2021 release. Granted, don't hold me to that or have that expectation for yourself. Because, you know, Persona 5 was supposed to be out in 2015 or 2016. Or wait, yeah.
2015, no, it was like 2014? Late 2015, right? It was,
and then it ended up coming out in 2017.
Middle or late 2015, yeah.
Or 2016, late 2016 in Japan, 2017 in America. Because that was at the second,
States.
Third. It was in my top three for 2017. That was a good year for video games.
Hell yeah, it was. That was the release of the Switch.
What else was there that jumped out? Just real quickly, JRPGs as a whole made a resurgence, you could say, in some regard.
Yeah.
Romancing Saga 3 is getting a port. Don't listen to remaster. Upscaling pixels is not a fucking remaster. but it's actually getting translated, which the only way to play it before was a fan translation, which quite frankly was incomplete. And Scarlet Grace is also being announced to be brought over to PC. And on top of that, Trials of Mana, which is maybe more commonly
Secret
known
Secret of Mana
the,
3.
Or, well, 2, technically.
I think it's 3 in Japan, 2 in
the It's Second Densetsu 3 in Japan.
Yeah,
Secret
okay.
of Mana is the second game in the series, and Final Fantasy Legends is Second Densetsu 1. So, like, you're right, but, like, I mean, if we were going by the Secret of Mana naming thing,
then it's technically two.
And that a lot of people are memeing it because Secret of Mana's remake wasn't that good. But this looks like an action RPG that looks way smoother than Secret of Mana. It could be good. And if it's not, you have the fucking SNES version also ported and translated, which again was only available through fan translations before. So good on you, Square. And speaking of old RPGs, just real quickly, Phantasy Star Online 2 finally gets announced to be brought over to the West, but it's through Xbox, which was shocking to me. I never expected this game to ever make it over here in the States in an official capacity. Like, technically, the English translation has been done for years because it's available in Asia.
But if you would have guessed one company to release it, Microsoft would have been, what, your third guess?
My last guess, I would have.
Yeah,
I mean,
or fourth guess, you PC port before Xbox.
This thing's not going to do well at all for Xbox, and it'll do fine on PC potentially. But this game is old. Like, I'm expecting Phantasy Star Online 3 to be announced soon. Like, this is like too little, too late, guys. I'm not saying this to Microsoft, by the way. Like, kudos anytime anyone brings over a game that has been desired and wanted to be brought over for years, but holy crap, Sega specifically, what's the deal? I know Sony was trying to get this game out a handful of years ago. What is the fucking deal, guys? Too little, too late. Like, I would have loved to play this game years ago. I would have dumped money into it. Like, it's a free-to-play game. But at this point, there's so many other games to play. Final Fantasy 14 is like at its peak, its renaissance, you could even say, with its most recent DLC or whatever expansion coming out. You have World of Warcraft Classic releasing at some point in time too. Despite like the normal WoW servers, I think are starting to lose members or subscriptions quite a bit. But I mean, there are other options to play and way more exciting games to play. Phantasy Star Online 2 is a good game, but does it hold up after 10 years after release or something like that? 7 years after release? I don't know.
Right. If you want it to be competitive in the market, you need to be, if you're going to re-release something, you need to re-release the best possible thing you can. But maybe it's got a more rabid like following. I guess I would have counted you in that though. So I guess your lack of interest or enthusiasm would have me concerned.
And it should. Like, Phantasy Star Online 1 is like one of my favorite online games of all time. It's just there are so many other games to play. Like, I don't have. I'm looking through my calendar right now. My virtual calendar. I don't see it. I'm sorry. Like, there's no room for PSO2 at this point. I do not have hours to grind for rare. Like, PSO essentially is what made Monster Hunter, like, to give you some perspective here. PSO2 does not do a better job of what Monster Hunter does. And like, granted, they're different games at this point, but like, I don't know. I hope it proves me wrong, but I also kind of like, that would take up either League of Legends or retro RPG time. Like, I don't know how else I play that game with my schedule. Hollow Knight, Silk Song.
Yes. Okay. I put it under my Nintendo category because I bought Hollow Knight for the PC. Just truly phenomenal game. It doesn't matter what platform you play it on, but damn, after it released for the Nintendo Switch, was I sad that I could not play it as a portable game, because it's such a nostalgic experience to play a Metroidvania, which Hollow Knight at its core is a amazing Metroidvania that gives me sort of a Dark Souls story or like thematic vibe. And this time I will absolutely be getting it for the Switch. It looks great. You have a new character that you're playing who is actually, I mean, they were a primary character to the story in the original Hollow Knight. So a lot of, you know, delving into the backstory or just like character that is probably your secondary protagonist or I guess your co-star of the game, Hornet, and doing it in a new location with brand new lore. It's going to be hopefully the, I guess it's, I hope for me, it's going to be the same experience I had playing Dark Souls 2 after playing Dark Souls. Like, just utter awe at the rebuilding of a world and setting that I find super interesting, and a return to just like incredibly fun and engaging combat mechanics. Already listening to the demo that they did at Nintendo Treehouse, it seems like Hornet's going to play pretty radically different from the original Hollow Knight character, with having a ledge grab, and I think she has a much less effective jump. I think she has a little bit more weight or like density to her character and how she moves, is what the person who was playing the demo was saying. But she also has built into the very start of the game a dash function that it looks like it adds like momentum to how she attacks, which is really interesting. Like, at the very beginning of the game, she's already dashing and executing attacks that are, it looks like the attack animations are actually based upon the momentum that she has, whether she's walking forward or she's dashing forward and attacking. She's doing a different attack, and there's like different momentum behind her sprite as she's doing it. So
that's super not excited something that's in the original new combat. Hollow Knight?
In the original, you have your regular attacks that swing your nail, and then you have combat arts that you can learn later, essentially. One of them is like a dash and releasing a slash attack. Another one is like a spinning slash. All of these things, though, seem to be like, there's something that you have to charge your attack button for. So it's a contextual button press, and then normally based on one other contextual action. So if you're neutral holding X, then you'll do the spin attack. If you dash and release it, you do a type of like very strong dash slash attack. And there's one other that I'm forgetting. But besides that, you just have your regular directional slash attack. And then if you're above something and you slash down, you kind of hop on it with a downward slash. And this one, it also looked like when the demoer, I don't know actually when the showcase player
demonstrationeer.
When the demonstrationeer did a downward attack, it looked like Hornet actually had a kind of downward dash with her nail, and it looked more like when you play Smash and you have those characters that commit to a downward strike, but they meteor down. Kind of like the downward kick from Greninja, where if you don't hit something, you just continue that momentum straight downward, which is not the way that the like downward slash and Hollow Knight worked at all. They really seem to have made her a completely different melee fighter, which is great, because it would be maybe a little weird for someone who's put 30, 40 hours into Hollow Knight to feel the same mechanics for a different character. And the introduction of her just having different neutral fighting with her nail, not even including all of the different items and skills she'll pick up throughout the game, is really interesting. And the fact that she has a ledge grab because she can't jump as high as the original Hollow Knight means that we're probably going to see, we're going to see a lot of really cool movement mechanics that they try to implement that are distinctly different from what we experienced in the original Hollow Knight, which is really cool. Metroid games have always been very fun to me, but once you've played enough handheld Metroids or even console Metroids, you kind of know what abilities you're going to get in sequence. You're going to get a bomb ability first and then a morph ball, and then you'll eventually get a ledge grab. They've always implemented like the wall kick as sort of a secret move that you can execute in the game, or the bomb jumps. But like, you'll get the screw attack at the very end. That's guaranteed. And then you'll have these big open rooms that you can traverse with the screw attack. Like, that's guaranteed on almost every single handheld Metroid, right? Or it's space jump, I guess. Screw attack's the damage applicator. It looks like in this, it's going to be different. I'm not going to have the same exact, like, dash through enemies move like the shadow dash allowed in Hollow Knight. And I'm going to have a lot more tools and different, like, pieces of weaponry or equipment to fight with, while in Hollow Knight you really had the nail and then a couple of essentially like spell based skills, which was like a ranged projectile and then an upward projectile and then a downward smash, well, an upward AOE, I guess, and that's more or less what you had available for combat. So it's going to be very interesting to see them not only tweak, but like completely rework the combat. Reminds me of playing Dishonored 2, where you can go back to the original Corvo mechanics, or you can just pull the brand new Emily mechanics into the game that are distinctly different and make it for, they make it transform from being a $60 game with one experience that has multiple pathways to a $60 game with two experiences that makes me think it's more like buying two separate games in the same world.
Do you think there's a DLC?
I'm so hyped.
Do you think there's a possibility that there's DLC, or not even DLC?
This game was supposed to be a DLC.
Right, right. But do you think there's a possibility, that there's free DLC that allows you to play as... what is the original character's name? Just Hollow Knight?
It's just the Hollow Knight. Or no, it's not even the Hollow Knight, because the Hollow Knight is actually a different character in Hollow Knight. But that's... too many details, too many lore spoilers.
Vanilla Beetle.
You play as Vanilla Beetle. Yeah,
I mean, there might be things they change about the traversal of what's her face? Needle.
I think Hornet. Yeah,
Hornet. Thank you. Yeah, that like would not allow you. Did I just Arya Stark all over this conversation? I might have.
They use a nail, and hers looks like a sewing needle. So I'll give you a fair pass on that.
I mean, so maybe there's some traversal things with her character that would not allow you to complete the game as Vanilla Beetle. But
we'll see if they bring
that in. It's a curious thing, because that's like an easy slam dunk of, hey, guess what? You beat the game. Now beat the game as the old guy.
It's possible. I don't know if they would. I may even say that it's unlikely, because they've taken it into a new setting and world. And so if they want to keep the cohesion of the story that they established for, say, the first time you play through, it would seem kind of weird. But there are plenty of games that do that, where they tell a story and then at the end they're like, okay, if you want to get weird with it, or if you want to kind of like break the whole narrative idea,
it's not canon. They might even remove the cutscenes.
This is just for mechanical fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's possible. I don't know how likely it is. I would say it's unlikely, but I can absolutely be proven wrong.
Real quickly, a couple of games of interest. No More Heroes 3. It's a new No More Heroes game. Apparently, this was heavily alluded to with Travis Strikes Back, which is like the arcade or arcadey sort of action game that Suda released beforehand. And then Suda obviously did a shit ton of hint dropping on Twitter before E3. And Deathloop also looks very interesting as far as the cinematic aspect and narrative goes, the concept of these two characters, these rivals that seem to want to kill each other, or that definitely do kill each other, constantly resetting or restarting in some way.
I have the most trust for this game out of anything else that that came out of Bethesda's conference, because this is from Arkane, and Arkane has made two of my favorite games for the computer I've ever played, Dishonored and Dishonored 2. But we didn't see gameplay. I don't know if we should note Cookie's biggest interests, but Watch Dogs Legion looked like a really weird application of the roguelike or roguelite idea of permadeath, at least, with having to recruit and use different characters, and once they die, they're gone from your roster. It's pretty neat. And I mean, they knew what they were doing when they had their, like, they had their primary focus of the second half of the video on an old woman causing, like, total chaos and, you know, just frailly, like, defeating these guards in melee combat.
So this is one of those moments where, like, I honestly feel like if they can nail what they're setting out for, this game is going to be excellent. It's not the concept that is, you know, the issue. It's the execution, and as to whether
execution, absolutely.
And I also got to note that this game has, I think, the perfect degree of seriousness attached to it. Watch Dogs 1, something about it just didn't, like, tie me in at all. Watch Dogs 2, I felt, was dumb in a way that, like, I don't mean dumb as in it was a stupid game. Like, it took itself as being kind of goofy and dumb, if that makes sense. And it was weird because you had a protagonist that was essentially, like, seemed to be a pretty cool, normal person, but at the same time was gunning down a shit ton of people, if you so chose to, right? It's that sort of GTA disconnect, I feel like. But this game seems to give you more of, like, a pressing narrative. Like, your government and your country has been taken over. Fuck, like, I repeat, fuck those guys. Fuck those people. We, as the resistance, being everyone potentially, need to step up and take action. Like, it feels like it could also be a potential, not like a message of telling the people of Britain or any nation to, you know, step up, but
it's a political commentary, whether they want it to be or not.
Right.
If it's a good one is really the tricky part.
I mean,
right?
Cause it could end up being half-assed, and then just, if it's half-assed, it's worthless in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. It's kind of the same reason that I already wrote off Outer Worlds. It's like, oh, this could be a cool narrative, but this seems like they've already completely fucked it up with their trailer.
It's the, like, one of the predominant reasons why I constantly have in the back of my head, like, I could play some fucking Persona 5 right now. I could play some Persona 5.
You need to tackle the topics with that kind of gravity, with at least some element of seriousness. And there's no reason that you can't have, you know, mirth and fun interwoven with the way that you tell the story or how the characters interact.
Yep.
Because that accurately reflects real life. But if it's all, if you don't take that seriously, if you don't take the seriousness seriously, it really does hit just like this really deaf tonal note. And I feel like it has really easy potential to just lose you as, like, an interested player. But if they do it right and they really have a good variety of the characters that you can play as, and there's a lot of flavor or personality to each one, it's going to be so cool. I haven't played Watch Dogs, but I would be interested in picking this up if I hear that the characters really shine in the game.
And they didn't really shy away from some of the gunplay, which is the only disappointing thing about that teaser trailer for me. Because, like, the concept of Watch Dogs was always cool when guns weren't a factor. Like, the idea is that you were you're dealing with gun threats or people with guns, but you're dealing with them more creatively. Like, the aspect is that like, it's interesting to come to conclusions to problems that are complex and creative, And a gun is hardly a creative or complex solution.
Yeah.
But that said, it seemed like by illustrating the first death, like, I mean, every time you picked up a gun in that trailer when you were at least the guy, it was like, you're getting screwed. Like, this is the worst thing you could be doing. Maybe you should not be shooting this gun. You're taking damage. You're going to die. And that's maybe, I don't know. Who actually knows how well that gunplay will work in that game and how much of a detriment it will be to a player if you're on normal difficulty. But it made me hopeful watching that trailer, thinking that it seems like the game is really trying to push you in a different direction. Like, stealth combat seems viable from watching the woman's gameplay after in freeing the jackass
the drone expert.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they want to do it, you know, there's a couple different approaches they can take that I see that are likely. One of them is, you know, you intentionally make the gunplay really bad. Maybe you add the tweak that there is a character with, like, essentially, like, martial experience, you know, using weapons. And so you can have good gunplay perks for that particular type of character. But for everyone else, it's a terrible option. And you disincentivize it that way. Or you just have it be bad all around, because that's not necessarily the concept of the game. We are also talking about the UK, which when you set things in America, the stark reality is that getting a gun in the United States and getting a wide variety of guns is so much easier than in a country like the United Kingdom. So it would be thematically relevant as well. They already are, like, one of the biggest surveillance states, you know, in the, like, democratic world. And they also have, like, a fair limit to the number of, like, guns that exist within the country. And they can replicate that pretty easily with the game and therefore limit access to those items or the utility of them. Maybe they're really only effective, because the guns looked weird in the game. Maybe they're really only effective against, like, drones and whatnot. Like, they're actually... you know, meant to disable or disarm robots or machines versus take a human life.
Well, and especially when you consider that the humans in this game are potential allies. I mean, I have a feeling that even the bad guys could be potential allies. If they're really going to do this right, you need to have people that are unhappy at their desk job. And when your desk job is being an armed guard, maybe you can be convinced to do something else.
I think they already demonstrated just a little bit of understanding of, like, nuance and setting.
Yeah.
When you see the first character before they die, they break out the batons before they switch to guns. Like, they go for the non-lethal approach before they gun him down. And that seems pretty in line with how even a, like, militarized officer would respond in the UK based upon what we hear their policing practices are like.
Right. So real quickly, Cookie had one last point regarding that he might be convinced by Microsoft to go back into the fold, so to speak. I'm assuming that means Microsoft services and consoles, noting that all the services they offer, he sees a value in their ultimate model. I wish you were here, because I would want to go into it a little more detail. But, like, my whole stance is that, like, you only have a limited amount of time in a given day or weekend, and that just because services are offered at a reasonable price doesn't mean you'll actually be able to utilize them.
Yeah, I do want to push him on this money to burn option, because he already does PC gaming. He has the PlayStation and plays PlayStation Online regularly. He's into Nintendo Switch and apparently is picking up Stadia. Like, he's quite interested in that. And so it really has me question, like, how do you, unless you are paid to be a full-time gamer, how do you even have time to play, like, 3 out of the 5 different platforms or consoles that you have available to you at any given time during a week?
And then don't forget about all the other subscription services you potentially have, like Netflix or Hulu and Crunchyroll or VRV or Funimation.
Which we know he has all of those.
Yeah. So, I mean, and to you people at home, that, like, my big take-home message here is that services in general, subscription services, are a dangerous thing to consider. And, like, the more that video games move to games as a service as well, the less friendly it is to the consumer. You need to remember that The ultimate model for the consumer is being able to buy tangible finished products. And this is a topic that we might talk about because I think Pokemon is something that Cookie has at least some regard for. And that's becoming a kind of heated topic with Sword and Shield. We don't have time to go over that this week.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another thing that we need to discuss, especially in the growing services industry that video games and other media and entertainment have become. But before we close out this episode, Shenmue 3 wins the reward for best dumpster fire of E3 2019. That's right. How do you piss off your rampant fan base that has been loyal to you for so long? You test them on the Epic Store.
I think that's the perfect end of the episode.
Forklifts aren't that cool, okay? I've lost faith in like almost every aspect. The only thing that they're nailing is the voice acting. That shit's on point. comments, questions. If you have anything you want to yell at us for having shit opinions, there are obviously many other games that look great. We just don't have enough time to talk about them. We're almost, edited down. It's going to be like an hour and a half, if not a little less. But we're almost at 2 hours for recording. You can write us and yell at us or whatever at podcast@fancyramen.com.
But if you really want to do yelling, try cookieskamilk@gmail.com. That's not a real email, guys. I wouldn't try it. You're going to make some poor person have to receive your negative emails.
Speaking of which, to those of you that have emailed us, we have 2 emails on hold. I apologize. I knew we weren't going to get to them today. And one address is Cookie specifically, so we will get to your emails despite the fact that they're 2 weeks late, or one of them is 2 weeks late or 3 weeks late.
We love you. We hear you. We won't let you down. Don't laugh at that. That's supposed to be serious.
Tell a friend, do all that stuff. You can also find us on streaming services, twitch.com/fancyramenTV or /cookieskamilk or /jfrayallday. Check the notes below if you're on YouTube or your podcast notes to see those things. I just started playing Suikoden 5 with the Japanese undub, and it's pretty fun. It's actually really good. That game's surprisingly good for its day and age. I think that does it. That's it. That's episode 122. 122 of episode... fuck. That's episode 122 of Fancy Ramen. Have a good, amazing week, everyone.
Bye, guys.